Welcome to the Care for Dairy podcast series. I'm Laura Rice. Care for Dairy has developed best practice guides to support the welfare of dairy calves, heifers, cows, and end-of-career animals. The guidelines consist of a series of fact sheets on key topics, some of which are discussed in the podcast series. The project is farmer-centred and benefited from involvement of stakeholders from farming and veterinary organisations as well as academia. There are four Care for Dairy podcasts, each looking at the different stages. In each episode of this series, I'll be joined by two guests, a representative from Care for Dairy and either a farmer, farm advisor or a veterinarian. So today we are discussing management strategies to reduce the risks from calf losses and morbidity and mortality. And I'm joined by Dr. Catherine McAloon, a vet from UCD Ireland, and our Care for Dairy representative, Dr. Claire Littlejohn from EDEL. So thanks for joining me today to discuss this topic. Claire, can you tell me a bit about you, EDEL, and how you got involved with Care for Dairy?
Yeah, so I'm a researcher and I did my PhD in animal welfare and behaviour. And in EDEL, I work as an animal welfare and behaviour researcher, but in ruminants. So that's how I joined the Care for Dairy project.
And Catherine, you're a vet at UCD School of Veterinary and the European Specialist in Bovine Health Management. Tell me about your background and what led you to working in this area.
Thanks very much. So I'm a vet, and after working for a while in practice in Ireland, I decided to return to UCD to do a specialisation in bovine health management. So I did an extra 3 years training in that and also did a research degree in dairy cow nutrition. So my European specialisation, I suppose, gives me an opportunity to work in the university. So I do a bit of a mix of research, clinical work and teaching veterinary students. I'm very passionate about calf health, so I have lots of ongoing research in this area, and we do a lot of troubleshooting calf health problems on farm as well.
And you're also involved with the roadshows, the Animal Health Ireland roadshows on calf health. So can you tell me a bit about that too?
Yeah, so I've had the privilege of chairing the technical working group on calf care in Ireland for the last few years. I guess our remit really is in knowledge transfer and dissemination of best practice to farmers. So each year we organise a series of roadshows in January before the kind of calving starts here, because we're very seasonal in Ireland. And I guess it's just kind of reviewing the key areas around calf health and welfare for each, you know, before each season. So they've been very successful over about the last 8 or 9 years or so.
And Claire, promoting a strong immune system is fundamental to reducing calf losses. What are the Care for Dairy best practice recommendations to achieving this goal?
So in the Care for Dairy project, we have three main recommendations. Firstly, to deal with the colostrum, we have to ensure an adequate passive transfer of antibodies to all calves by consuming colostrum within 2 to 3 hours after their birth. Then there should be a second colostrum intake within 6 to 12 hours after birth. And this intake should bring to a total of 10% of the body weight minimum of the calf. If they are suckling, either their dam of a foster cow, we have to ensure that that cow is first healthy, that it has enough colostrum and of adequate quality. And we have also to make sure that the calf have access to the teat. By retaining contact with their dam or a faster cow and having like the possibility to interact with other calves, this will help them to develop a positive feeding behaviors, which obviously will support their immune system and also help them to stay healthy. Another recommendation would be to rearing them outdoors with obviously adequate shelter and comfortable lying areas, as it can improve their health and lower morbidity and mortality rates. And finally, the third recommendation would be that to space out stressful events to prevent calves from becoming overwhelmed by those, as it can impede their growth and cause immune suppression.
And so you're recommending to keep the cow stress-free and happy, and it has a much and healthy, and it has a much more positive effect on the calf and suckling. Catherine, many farmers across Europe do not allow the calf to suckle colostrum during the first day or longer as recommended best practice. What have you seen in practice that works well to ensure adequate colostrum intake and immunity in a calf allowed to suckle the cow?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting, I suppose, In terms of the farm system, I think that's probably the most fundamental at the start, and really understanding that and all different systems can work. And I guess it's about trying to provide bespoke advice to the farm system that you're working with. So for that, you know, cow-calf contact systems or foster cow systems, you know, they're certainly becoming increasingly popular. But there's logistics to that in terms of, you know, management of how the cows are calved so that they, you know, there's not mismothering, etc. Hygiene in the calving pen, stocking rate, all those things are quite important in terms of success of that. But I suppose regardless of the system, whether it's cow-calf contact systems or whether it's withdrawing the calf and hand-feeding colostrum, the principles are largely the same. Ultimately, the calf colostrum intake has to be supervised, which means adequate labour and trained staff, etc. The cat, we can't just leave it to chance, as we know from historic data that that can be very risky. We still need to test colostrum quality, so that can be done whether we're hand feeding colostrum or feeding it cow to calf. You know, and you know, testing the actual quality is very important. So things like a Brix refractometer is a cheap and cheerful piece of kit that most farms should have. Every farm should have, and we look for a reading above 22% on that to deem that colostrum adequate to feed to the calf. So the quality piece, the supervision, and then finally the volume is important. So ensuring that the calf is vigorous enough soon after birth to get up and suckle, or if we're hand feeding colostrum, that we make sure that we're, you know, feeding enough. So I suppose to go back to the piece about what works well, I guess in Ireland, as I mentioned, we've about 1.1 million calves arriving inside 12 weeks. So it's a slightly different system here in that, I guess it's more common that calves are hand fed colostrum. And again, that's just to do with the current system. Of course, systems can change. But again, the principles are exactly the same, that farms are tuned into the absolute necessity to deliver colostrum by whatever means, whether it's cow to calf or directly fed to calf by hand. So that process is done kind of similar to what Claire alluded to. At least the Irish industry advice here is, again, quality is largely driven by how quickly. So there's lots of things, that how the cow is managed in terms of low stress, but also her diet, her body condition score, all of those things are important, that she's in good health, that she's not running milk before calving so that it's not transitioning already, and that the milk is at colostrum is collected quite quickly after calving. So we would say ideally within the first hour, and that colostrum is fed to the calf within the first 2 hours, and that we'd feed at least 3 litres. So, but then of course a second feed, or you could potentially feed 4 litres at one feed for lots of big calves. So again, we stick to the kind of rule 10% of body weight. So that can be difficult to ensure if you're doing a supervised cow-calf contact system. So again, the proof is in the pudding in terms of, you need to be very careful, you know, have mortality, morbidity rates monitored. If your system is not broken, you don't need to do anything about it. If there are gains to be had in calf health, then it's about revising the colostrum management protocol. And then finally, I suppose, if we are collecting colostrum by hand, which would be commonly done here, again, I suppose, given that there's probably large numbers of cows calving per day, and it's difficult to have the labour or infrastructure to ensure adequate supervision, then I guess hygienic collection and proper storage so that it's not hanging around unrefrigerated is very important. It needs to be collected very cleanly. These are neonates, so we need to collect it cleanly, and then to, you know, if it's not being fed straight away, refrigerated for a max of 48 hours, or potentially frozen and fed later, or we're feeding a defrosted source. So again, there's a lot of detail, but the principles are the same. Supervised, making sure it's good quality colostrum is given quickly and enough of it.
Okay. So you're both saying volume is very important, isn't it, within that first day? And Care for Dairy also have recommendations that aim to reduce disease, challenge and stress. Claire, can you tell us about these?
So recommendation to reduce disease and challenge and stress. We have important practices that we refer to as best practices. Is that, like, first of all, like, a farm must have a staff who's trained in order to obtain a good human-animal relationship. And they have to use low stress handling techniques. So for that, they can use positive reinforcements, such as, for example, groomings or treats, the use of treats, for example. When there are painful procedures, such as castration or disbudding for calves, they have to ensure that every care is taken to minimize the stress for the animals and the pain that they experience. because that can impede their recovery. And it can accumulate with other stressors to negatively impact their health and welfare. They have to use the appropriate medication, which is either anesthesia, sedatives, or pain reliefs. And at the firm level, another best practice recommendation would be health planning. For example, vaccination protocols, staff training to ensure that they conduct correct diagnosis, and they follow an effective treatment protocol for the management of those health issues. Biosecurity is another very, very important topic. Calf enclosures should be separated from other animals, except, of course, if they are with their dam or a foster cow. And calves should be reared in as much as possible homogeneous groups, because that would help preventing diseases transmission between them and with other animals, which is obviously vital for the animal and the farm. For the staff, their workflow should always go from clean to dirty, and they should obviously follow biosecurity routines. For example, when handling sick animals, they should have specific protective equipment to help them limit disease spread between animals.
And Catherine, what have you seen as the key success factors for calf environments in practice?
Yeah, so I think that's a really interesting question. And some colleagues in the research group in UCD have been looking at the impact of the environment on a very common calf disease, which would be calf pneumonia. And I think we get asked this question a lot, you know, how do I build the ideal calf shed, whether that is for cow-calf contact system or whether it is for calves reared separately, that the principles of environment and how it can impact disease in calves is actually quite important. But it's also an area where we do lack a lot of research in terms of, you know, really concrete advice. So again, I think for me, a lot of it is, again, working with the farm you have and trying to promote the most environmental factors that can, you know, control the controllables, I suppose. So it's not going to be a one size fits all. I think the reality, I suppose, is that we have a lot of research now to show that we shouldn't be rearing calves in isolation. They should be at least pair housed or group housed, or potentially, you know, reared with their dam, but still they need an area separate for themselves to lie. So I guess it's about access to lots of fresh water, access to feed. But I guess specifically to the environment, for me, there's a few things that we would look to really try and distill into the detail, you know, if we were looking at a farm, either design or investigation of a health problem. And those things would be the kind of shelter that's provided. So I guess it depends if the cow or if the calf has access to indoors and outdoors, or whether it's just indoors. So those kind of things are important. So they certainly need an area to exercise and run around. There's nothing more heartening to see as young calves playing around in a clean, well-bedded shed, but lots of room. But the other things, I suppose, there's kind of three factors, I would say. One is ventilation. The other would be temperature control. And finally, moisture control within the environment. So how we go about that is, ventilation is quite a difficult one, but ultimately we need to provide fresh air to the calves, you know, to remove stale air and pathogens from the shed. And we also need to make sure that that is done without creating a draft or, you know, increased air speed around calf level, because that can really upset them. So that can be done in lots of different ways. I guess, at least in Ireland, we rely a lot on the wind, which we have quite a lot of, but it's about shed design to promote that. So, you know, adequate inlet, shed orientation to the prevailing wind, allowing fresh air through the shed, but not at calf level. Again, blocking up drafts at calf level, that kind of thing. There are all sorts of different ways, you know, in hutches, for example, their positioning is important. And also, you know, there are systems where we can actually control the ventilation in the shed, like positive pressure ventilation systems. So I guess it's whatever we can do to maximize fresh air and remove that stale air without draft. The temperature control is important because calves, particularly under 4 weeks of age, you know, really need to use energy to keep warm. And if we don't do that for them, then they have to direct that feed energy away from immunity and growth and so on, and they become cold stressed. And that's a problem, I suppose, right across Europe. So how do we do that is, again, it's back to shed design, but ultimately things like bedding, lots and lots of fresh, clean bedding with high nesting scores. So that means that they're cozy and their legs are tucked in within straw. And that's important in terms of for that young calf piece. We can go, there are other things that I've seen work, like calf jackets potentially on some farms, but I don't think they're a one size fits all again in terms of for some farms they work, for some they won't. How we need to feed them enough milk, because that also helps ensure, you know, temperature control. And I guess it's about controlling that environment where possible. So it's difficult, you know, unlike pigs, poultry, or potentially some of the veal systems where it's completely controlled in a closed system. We really have to work to promote the environmental risk factors for disease to make sure that we're controlling everything we possibly can in a farm environment. And that will be different from farm to farm. Finally, I'd say one thing we would, well, maybe two things. The drainage is important as well. So we'd like, you know, a sloped floor, channels cut in it, able to really try and help remove that moisture from the shed. Because obviously there's a lot of urine buildup and so on. So having adequate drainage within calf pens, whether, you know, it's a pair-housed calf or whether it's a group-housed calf or even under hutches, again, that's quite important. So I think those things are really, you know, the kind of details that we chase for environmental controls. But I suppose the one thing that will modify all of that is stocking rates, so that they're not overstocked, because you know, you can do a lot by making sure that there's not too many animals in the one airspace or the one floor space. So at least in Ireland at the moment, we're recommending a minimum of 2 meters floor space. That is likely to go to 3 meters floor space, given the new EFSA advice, at least for the kind of bedded area. And then, you know, with much more space allowed for them to play. So there's quite a lot in the environment. And I think, again, it comes down to farm to farm, where we can make marginal gains to promote the individual environments, to allow the calves to mimic, as you know, or express as normal a behaviour as possible, play, foraging, and, you know, social interaction, etc.
So it's really important, their environment, and it makes a huge difference. And Claire, what would you say are the best practice recommendations regarding monitoring calf health?
So the best practice that are recommended in the Care for Dairy project are to enable proactive prophylactic care, but also to ensure a responsive intervention as soon as illnesses or injuries are identified. And in order to appropriately do that, farmers should conduct a regular health management planning and review it with input from both their farming advisors or their veterinarian, to make sure that they can safeguard the health status of all animals on the farm. And so that should ensure that there's both preventative but also a responsive plan in place. And if there are complications occurring during those established protocols, best practice farms would seek like veterinary advice before revising the protocol that they are currently using. And obviously, last but not least, like all health plans should obviously comply with local regulation.
And as a vet yourself, Catherine, how can vets best support farmers in health planning, including when they should call a vet?
Yeah, I think, you know, there can be a huge benefit to having the vet as part of the, you know, I guess we're talking about calf health here, but, you know, the same applies across the board. So, you know, we talk about herd health problems, we talk about our herd health cycle, and, you know, farmers are used to monitoring, you know, fertility benchmarks and cell count benchmarks and so on. But sometimes when the mortality, morbidity, the KPIs around rearing calves sometimes, you know, have to be really looked for. So I think that seeing your vet as not somebody who is just there to react and troubleshoot a problem, but can be involved in the kind of proactive health planning is a key piece. So having that vet so that they, you know, really understand the farm system. So like, what's the labour requirement? You know, who is available? Who needs to be trained? Maybe cat refresher. We do, at least in Ireland, you know, lots of refresher stuff in the early season, you know, December, January, so that things like SOPs are in place. And I think whatever the farm system is or the farm size, that they can be really helpful. So things like, you know, what's the colostrum protocol? Who's in charge of delivering that? Who's going to test the colostrum? You know, when is the vet coming to monitor the path of transfer then in the calf? So, you know, we would recommend that there are screening tests done, you know, 10 to 12 calves blood tested for path of transfer to evaluate the colostrum management performance. That SOPs are in place for the cleaning of both colostrum, but also feeding equipment. So if calves are, you know, they're not on automatic feeders, there needs to be, there needs to be a system in place for how often the teats are cleaned and rotated, or how often milk bars and buckets are properly cleaned, you know, and I guess there's detail within that. So I think having input into the sort of hygiene piece, as well as, you know, the kind of overall feeding plan, those things are really important. But then the specific health challenges to the farm. So there's not a one-size-fits-all vaccination program. You know, some calves will benefit from young calf vaccination, some will be better having it later. So I guess having, again, a good relationship with your vet so that you can have that advice bespoke and tailored to the farm. Protocols for management of sick calves, you know, so that every, you know, every farm knows that at the at development of diarrhea, for example, that, you know, ideally those calves are isolated or there's some kind of hospital facility where they can still have sort of contact but can maybe break infection control, infection cycles, or at least that calves are early intervention is important with any calf disease, whether it's scour or diarrhea or pneumonia. So again, having a protocol that the farm would at least getting electrolytes delivered to the calf on day one, and that then, you know, they know when to call the vet. So if it's off, the calf's off the feed, for example, for maybe a couple of feeds, if it's recumbent, if it has a temperature, that those are things that will need intervention. So again, working with your vet to develop a bespoke protocol so that, you know, calves are treated very promptly and effectively.
Yeah, it's right. It is important, isn't it, then, to get the vet involved in an earlier stage. So the take-home messages, I think, are the importance of promoting a strong immune system if the calves, which is done through colostrum intake from succulent calf comfort and reducing stress and reducing disease through health planning and biosecurity and then getting veterinary advice early. So thank you so much for your time. So this is my guest, Dr. Claire Littlejohn, and from Care for Dairy Consortium, and Dr. Catherine McLoon from UCD. Thank you for listening. For more information, visit the Care for Dairy website, www.careforderry.eu, where you can find more information on this podcast topic, the other podcasts in the series, best practice guides and fact sheets on the welfare of dairy calves, heifers, cows and end of career animals. My name is Laura Rice. Thank you for listening.